and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. My name is Peggy Ployer, and I am the host and weekly of this weekly broadcast, Empowering Homeschool Conversations, as well as the founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with learning challenges, and I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn more about those resources and just how you can connect with them and get some encouragement, because that's what we're all about, encouraging and equipping families. And today we're going to just dive into that with my guest, Stephanie Buckwalter. Welcome, Stephanie, welcome back. Thanks for joining me again.
Great. Thank you, Peggy. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. So today we're going to continue where we started last week. This whole month we're focusing on broadcasts that just address specific questions when we have children who have medical issues that affect learning. And intellectual disabilities are one of those things, and it kind of covers a whole span of medically, I guess, precursors to why children don't learn. And so we aren't going to probably solve your problems, but we're going to help you from the parenting side on how to deal with a lot of the things that you face. And Stephanie is such a good person to have here because she is a mom, a homeschool mom, who has actually walked in those shoes and has a lot of wisdom to share with us. So I'm excited to have you here, Stephanie, to share on this topic.
Thank you. And I'd like to make one small correction, is walking. My daughter's in high school.
Oh, that's right. So yes. Yes.
Like a fully disabled child.
Yeah. Well, you do it so good. I keep thinking that you've done it longer.
Well, the boys are gone. The boys are out of school.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, and you know, I think something good to bring up too is that we have a lot of partners who have older children, you know, high school or even beyond, and they continue to homeschool through even young adulthood because they find that their children with these more profound intellectual disabilities really have grown accustomed to this routine and the schedule within their home. So I want to encourage you as parents. We may say our homeschooling years are done, and maybe they're going to continue a little longer, but it something to consider. But yeah, so as we get started, Stephanie, I would just love for you to share a little bit about yourself with our audience, and just maybe some background on you and your family, and then what you do in the homeschooling realm. And I know we'll kind of end also in talking about that too, but just like people to get to know you and how they I'll leave it at that. I think I'm getting too chatty.
Okay, that's fine with me. My name is Stephanie Buckwalter, and I've homeschooled for over 17 years. I have 5 children, and I've actually taught all 12 grades now. And I've had children that are gifted, neurotypical, mild, and moderate special needs. So I've had the whole gamut at our house, and with different all the different issues that come and go with those things. I am an author, speaker, curriculum developer. I'm currently developing curriculum specifically for special needs kids. And, you know, anytime you want, we could talk about that. Yes. In my spare time, I like spend time in nature. When I ask her, I like to spend time in nature because it's just refreshing. And I love to do research, which is a good thing because when you have a special needs child and especially one with intellectual disabilities and really no other diagnosis or, you know, like overarching diagnosis,
right,
then you get to do a lot of research anyway. So I just happen to like it too. So,
well, that's good.
Perfect meeting place.
Yeah. That's where, I mean, I've seen a lot of the things that you've written, and, you know, it's just trial and error, what works and what doesn't. And so, but it's good that you have a plethora of ideas that you can find and go from. So that's great. I see we have a lot of viewers on with us. I just want you to know if you are watching on YouTube or Facebook, that you can comment and you can ask questions as we're going along. If something just spurs a question specific to your homeschooling situation, we'd love to address that. If you are watching on the Empowered Homeschool Network, just know that in order to comment so that we can see those, you have to click on the YouTube video and then we'll be able to and comment on YouTube. Otherwise, if you click on or you make a comment on the Empowered Homeschool site, then we'll be able to come back and answer them later, but we don't see them live right here on this platform. So that's just a little distinction. Last week, I know we had a lot of comments on there and I went, oh no, there was a lot of people commenting and we didn't include those in the conversation. So just so you know that, that's how you can get connected with us here. But so as we're getting started, Stephanie, what are some of the biggest issues parents face when homeschooling or just in general parenting a child with an intellectual disability?
Wow, I could give you a list of like 20.
Probably.
I'll pick like the top five or so.
Okay.
I think when it comes to homeschooling in particular, the thing that surprised me the most was stamina. That's like the number one thing. Because in my case, because my ID child has brain anomalies, it's like teaching someone with a permanent concussion. And that means when she was younger, I actually got a chart on the symptoms of what a concussion looks like from the CDC website. Hmm. And I made a chart with the symptoms down the left side of the page and then how that presents in her on the right side of the page. Hmm. And that was so helpful, just wrapping my mind around what was going on. And when she would go places, like if she was in a class at church or whatever, I could share, okay, if you start seeing these things, that means that her brain is overtired and you need to stop, you know, do something else, give her a break.
Yes.
It's very, very helpful just to think of it like a concussion and really just go to CDC website and look up the, you know, definition of a concussion. The reason I like theirs, because theirs was really simple. You can get them anywhere, but that one was just really simple. And then in addition to the intellectual disability that also relates to stamina is your child may have processing problems, seizures.
Right.
Your daughter had seizures.
Mm-hmm.
Tourette's or Tourette's-like tics that kind of get in the way. Developmental delays, schizophrenia, mental health issues. There's a whole lot that can go with intellectual disability. So you're not just dealing with one thing. But each of those creates stress on your child's system. Or
that's
it's
a
symptom
point.
Of stress
on
the system.
Okay.
Or
yeah.
It's a downward spiral of both.
Oh, yeah.
This causes stress on the system, and then that causes stress on your child.
Mm-hmm.
It causes stress on the system, and it's just like it spirals downward. So those things affect stamina. So stamina would be like the first thing I would think of.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. I didn't, you know, even think of that how much, you know, and a lot of times we just feel like we can just push them more and but you're actually making it harder when the stamina is falling. I'm just thinking about even, you know, working out, your body needs those rest points. And your brain is the same way. It needs that time to repair and to build that back up before you can go again. So, yeah. So what else do you got for us?
The second thing, a lot of times communication issues are coupled with intellectual disability.
Yeah.
And that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
So my daughter has apraxia and she's nonverbal to a degree. She can say a few words. She uses an AAC device to just a few words. And at one point she knew up to 600 signs. That I could say the word, she would give me the sign that she's lost some of those over time. So she's a lot of different things to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, the bottom line is, I still don't know what's going on inside her head all the time.
Yeah.
I can see sometimes, this is one of the hardest things, I think, seeing the frustration that she wants to say something, but she doesn't have the words.
Right.
But by the same token, on the positive side of that is I can see the intelligence that's there because she doesn't have a word. Sometimes she can pull up, when she was like 4 years old, she pulled up a sign that meant almost the same thing. And I was able to
Wow.
She said.
Yeah.
And by the way, anyone else who has a child with ID or is nonverbal, if your child laughs at things and sees humor in things, whether it's, you know, SpongeBob, Tom and Jerry, funniest movie videos, cat videos, if they're laughing at things, my daughter's physical therapist told us early on that that is a sign of intelligence, like higher order thinking.
Oh,
so if your child gets humor, take that as a huge win. It's huge that there's a lot more going on.
That's so encouraging. Yes.
Than you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, always assume intelligence.
Yes.
I'm doing a little side thing here. I don't know if you've ever read the book Ito in Autism Land.
I haven't.
It's written by a young man who had autism, and he learned how to communicate using Soma rapid prompting method.
Hmm.
He actually worked with Soma herself, which is kind of cool.
Huh.
And so when he was about 12 years old, he started blogging about all these things, and he talked, he had severe, he has still to this day, I think he's about 21 now, but he has severe autism, and, you know, with hand flapping and blank face, because he talks about this in his book, you know, the blank countenance and things. And he just talked about what it's like living in that silent world. And so if you have a nonverbal child, please do yourself a favor and read the book.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's called Ito.
Ito, I-D-O. Ito in Autism Land. It's on Amazon. You can get used copies. It's been out for a while. And actually, he just wrote, as a 20-year-old, he wrote a fiction book called Into Worlds. And he assures us, I can't remember the name of the character. Let's say something like Joshua. He goes, I'm not Joshua and Joshua is not me. It is a work of fiction, but the emotions in it are real. So I bought that book and I read that one too.
Oh, wow.
So, if you get a chance, I know it's a total aside, but especially if you have a nonverbal child and a nonverbal child with autism, that really gave me insight into what appears like an intellectual disability may not be so much of that. We'll get to that towards the end, I'm guessing, about neurological organization and how that plays into it. But right now, I'm still going on.
Well, you know, it's just, communication. That was the same issue with one of my adopted siblings. She basically had a brainstem, and they really didn't think anything was going on. And then my parents learned the method of eye gazing for communication, and she started communicating. And it even shocked the brain surgeon that had worked with her. It's like, I had no idea she understood as much as she understands. So you just don't know. And so assume intelligence. Yes, that is so important.
Awesome. No matter what it looks like, assume that there is a working brain and just get out.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of that is, you know, behavior is communication. And we see a lot of behavior and sometimes we just get frustrated with it. But it does lead to, they want to say something, they want to communicate, and we have to get to the bottom of it. So, awesome. So what else?
Okay. Comprehension issues, which goes with communication. It's sometimes, if you have communication problems too, it makes it hard for them to demonstrate their knowledge. My daughter finally found the American Girl doll store. She's into the Welly Wishers, which are the 14 and a half inch dolls for the younger kids, which is fine. And so she's been going to the store and all that stuff. And she bought a little book on friendship. And as I was reading it with her, I realized that so much of friendship depends on communication.
Yeah.
And I just realized that I was talking about comprehension.
That's okay.
But so much of friendship depends on communication. And when behavior is an issue, communication is, it's on the negative end and the positive end.
Right.
So teaching manners and all that is very helpful. So back to comprehension.
Yeah.
So without comprehension, it's hard to know what your child knows, what they're thinking, what questions they might have, like trying to second guess every question. Because now I have a grandchild who's two. So he's just starting to talk. and or even just watching videos on YouTube, seeing these little kids, and they just have all these questions. And I used to feel bad about that, that, you know, my daughter had all these questions and I couldn't answer them, or I didn't even know what to answer. You know,
right. Yeah.
But because comprehension is slow to come also with intellectual disability, she probably wasn't ready for those at that age anyway. And once she got some ability to communicate, it was, I had a much better idea of at least what she was thinking of. And the one other clue to that comprehension is there, that there's a lot of comprehension. And this is a normal progress process with a neurotypical child, is in the beginning, they just point to and talk about things in their immediate environment. And then one day they ask about something that's not in the room with them. And I remember when my daughter because she was trying to communicate something, and before it was very easy. I would just look around the room and say, okay, that's what she's talking about. And she got to the point, and it was exciting. So I was like, she comprehends that there's something beyond what's in this room right this minute. And it's so exciting. But comprehension is still difficult, and it's hard to tell that she knows. Even to this day.
But that insight that you had, that she took that leap. You know, we sometimes wonder if our students are getting, you know, if they're progressing. And so finding progress in some very unique ways versus, you know, a checklist that shows us that the progress has happened, but looking for it and observing for it and watching changes to notice progress is important too. It's great. So yeah, let me pull up questions here.
So another thing is just demonstrating progress, and we kind of talked about this already. It's just hard to demonstrate for her to demonstrate what she knows, because with intellectual disability, you may not get the same answer every time, or the right answer, or you know the right answer. I know she knows the right answer, but she can't get it on demand. I have noticed that with intellectual disability, if I just keep putting stuff into her head, if I ask her what I just said, she can't do it. But down the road, I will see her initiate something with me that shows that she does know that.
That's
the thing, is these kids have a hard time initiating conversation or friendship or even getting a task done. It's having a hard day when she's having, when it's more concussion-like than others, she will not be able, I'll say, you know, go, you know, she asked for a glass of water, and I'll say, this was just yesterday. I'll say, well, you go get it. You know, I'm sitting here right next to you, and I don't want to get up either. But she kept doing that throughout the day, and I realized that she was just, her brain was telling her body to do that, but she couldn't initiate the action to go do it. So there are days like that too, and that's all, I'm guessing that's all part of the intellectual disability. It's just the inability to initiate and produce answers on demand.
Yeah. It's got to be so hard to constantly struggle for, is this what I'm dealing with or not? You know, and there's so many things as a parent with all the issues that your child has, and they affect us as a parent. How has parenting your daughter affected you? And not just, you know, as in parenting, but as well as in teaching. Can you share a little bit on that?
Yeah. I hope I don't cry.
That's okay. I cry every once in a while too.
This is the hard part of the talk. I think the hardest thing is kind of what we talked about a little bit earlier, about not knowing what she doesn't know, what she does know.
Not
being able to connect on an intellectual level is really hard. And I know a lot of parents have the problem, they can't connect on an emotional level either.
Right.
My daughter, she's never really cried. Whatever's wrong with her brain, no tears come out. And she'll have to say on her iPad, she'll say sad. And we don't know what she said, but I can't tell any other way if she doesn't tell me. And so that's always been really hard. And then as far as teaching, that thing about not being able to get the same answer twice in a row, to know you really got it. And as a matter of fact, we were doing a computerized math program, and I had set the level at 80%, saying she has to get 80% right before she can move to the next lesson. And I think she actually knew how to do stuff. She just couldn't get the answers right. She got enough of them right. So I lowered it to 7, and then she didn't want to do the math program anymore, because I think it was, she knew it, she just didn't want to have to do the same lesson over and over.
Right.
So I lowered the percentage that she had to get right to 70%, and then all of a sudden she was fine. So, because I think she knew the material well enough to move on.
Right. And it goes back to when you were talking about earlier, sometimes she just can't pull that information out when it's necessary. And that can be frustrating, knowing that you know the answer, but I just don't know where to find it at that time. And so an accommodation. And I think a lot of times we think that accommodation is means that they don't know it. But you knowing your daughter know that that is probably enough, that she does know it. It's just there's something else going on.
Well, and I was clued into that from Ito in Autism Land, because he talked about that. He said he can tell his body to do something. So my daughter has apraxia, which is akin to dyspraxia, which is, it's all both of motor planning. One of them specific to speech, mouth stuff, usually, technically. I mean, that's how we use it related to speech. And dyspraxia is when your body doesn't motor plan correctly. And so the whole area of motor planning is another problem you can have with intellectual disability. That's kind of where that comes from. And so he talked about that. He talked about he would tell his brain to do something and he couldn't do it. Or he would try to point at something and he knew the right letter, he knew the right answer, but his hand wouldn't go to the right place. One time someone told him to go give flowers to his aunt, and there were too many people and he was too frustrated, so he just handed it to his grandfather. And so they thought, well, he doesn't know who his aunt is. And so they spent all this time telling him who his aunt is. He goes, I know who my aunt is. You know, anyway, it's kind of crazy. So that kind of clued me in to start looking at things like that. So I've started looking at, especially after reading that book, that just assuming a much, much, much higher, almost average level of intelligence that just can't get out.
Right.
And it, I mean, so now that she's a teenager, that I probably wouldn't have thought that in the early years. There's just so much more going on there. So that intellectual disability is frustrating, but it's also, I see there, the encouragement comes when I'm teaching her and she gets something even that one time, even though she makes it 4 times, she got it the one time. And that's my big clue that yes, she got it and we can move on.
Right.
I have to stay there, because what happened, my daughter was in public school for a few years. And what I noticed there was, and it happens in homeschool too, so it's not just the public school system. And just after, I loved all of her teachers that she ever had, and they were all kind to her. But the school, the public school system just can't do what we can do at home, nor can we do what the public school system does. So it's, so it's not comparing apples to apples. Really.
Right. Yeah.
But she was there for a time and she was what I call caught in perpetual kindergarten. It's in the school system, and we can kind of get caught up in this in homeschool too. In the school system, they're required to show progress because of IDEA, the Disabilities Act. And so they are required by law to do this and all the IEP meetings and all that stuff.
Right. And all the testing and the, the progress reports.
And we can do as homeschool parents, even with our special needs child, we can get so caught up in those deficit skills that we, kind of drop the other academic things. And so my whole goal with my daughter is to remediate her, you know, 3 R's, reading, writing, arithmetic, as much as I can. And, you know, doing addition in high school is where we're at. But at the same time, keep teaching her about the world around her through science, through social studies, through social skills, because I want her, even though she won't be able to process fast enough, to participate in a regular conversation unless someone's, you know, focused on her, like a group of people. But if someone's sitting there talking about the coronavirus, or if they're talking about vaccines, or if they're talking about what else, the, you know, the Revolutionary War, or George Washington, or World War II, or whatever it is, you know, the boys, we talk about the wars all the time. That she does, she's not lost in the conversation. She won't just have to tune it out because she has no clue what they're talking about.
Right, so she has some context.
If we mediate the three R's, but give as much education as possible in all areas.
Just enriching her life.
Yeah, that's a good word for it, enriching.
Yeah, that's so important. We have a question from a viewer. Do you mind if we add that into the mix? Okay. Karen asks, social opportunities for neurotypical homeschooled students can sometimes be limited or a bit struggle to find. How have you found social opportunities for your homeschooled IDD child?
For me, we, her friends come from one of two places. One of them is church, because we have, our church happens to be a larger church with a disabilities ministry. And that's so helpful. There are people there her age that have, most of them have autism, but unfortunately they're boys. There's some with Down syndrome, but they're boys. And so there was one girl there and she hung out with her, but now she has moved away. So we have another girlfriend to play with.
Yeah.
And my daughter-in-law, who's married my oldest son, so she's been in the family for a couple of years now. And as a matter of fact, that's where my daughter is right now while I'm doing this. I had to run her over to their house. And she kept saying, I want to go to my friend's house.
Oh.
So that's really where we get our friends, is among family, from church. I haven't really found any in the homeschool community locally, even though some of those people at church homeschool. It's the problem, the hardest thing is, even when you're in the special needs community, they're so different from each other that it's hard to connect. And I, the one thing I struggle with, though, I will mention, is thinking I have to be her friend. Like, I'm her friend. And so I have to be all these things for her. I still, to this day, I go back and forth on that, because, you know, you have to be mother and teacher and friend and therapist. Yeah, so you end up being all these things and separating out those roles. So I'm sorry I don't have a really good answer for you, but that's where we have found ours so far, is in a church with family and with really any adult who will take an interest in your child. Is probably the best way I can say that. So find someone you trust, who will be kind, and don't leave them together for too long initially, because you know how hard it is for you with your child. It's 10 times harder for someone who's not grown up with a child or been around that child. But you also want to, you know, protect your child, because there are some, you know, I've heard horror stories of leaving them with the wrong people, usually related with the opposite sex. So just don't do that. Don't ever do that. Even this was a, even like with a trusted friend of the family. But just find people who are willing to take an interest, usually older. Or what I've also found, my daughter, she either plays with kids who are a lot younger or people who are older than her. Since she's not really, so peers, especially anywhere middle school to high school, they just think they're too caught up in their own self-image and stuff. It's really hard for them to get outside themselves and be kind to someone, unless they grew up with someone like that or has someone like that in the family.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. My parents have found that their best PCAs come from homeschooled large homeschooled families. Who are used to lots of kids around a lot of time, and so they actually use them as PCAs at their house, and they are like buddies, but really two my siblings have become their friends, because that is, it's either who's ever in the house is their friend and their sibling, or these buddies that come in and we'll maybe take them shopping because they are a little bit older, and can go out and do activities with them. But yeah, that one-on-one, you get into a group setting and they get lost. Either they become the really loud one, or they become the one who, you know, everybody's forgot about because they're so quiet enough, you know, and don't want to do all the group activities. And so, yeah, so that's some good advice. Yeah. Just, it's unique too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great question, Karen. Yeah. So we were talking about just, you know, how you as a parent have been affected. Is there anything else you have to share on that?
Since my daughter is the youngest child, I'm not really affected like this, but I know there are people who are affected with, they have siblings and they can't just devote all their homeschool time. Because right, mm-hmm. child before I had, you know, five kids at once.
Right.
So I don't remember what that's like. And so I have to do what I can. And again, I think for me, the biggest thing is keeping in, I have this little graphic that I made to help myself, just that we're created for three things. I thought about this. I thought, okay, she's getting close. You know, why did God create us? And how does that apply to my daughter? Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, we're created for relationship. Mm-hmm. So, we're created for relationships. You know, there's social connection. We're created for work in the Garden of Eden, said here. Mm-hmm. So being productive in some way, and now with our kids, I've had to think through that and say, well, she's never got a job. She's never going to go to college. But for her, being productive can be serving the family by doing dishes, you know, unloading the dishwasher,
yes.
mm-hmm. creating little works of art in school, or even creating a little lap book. Mm-hmm. Those are all acts of productivity related to work. So I don't look at it as just, you know, working a job. It's being productive. I kind of put it in three things: being productive, serving others, or creating a piece of art, a work of art of some kind. And then the third area is, I always forget this, productivity. I put academics under productivity. Hmm. Oh, now I can't remember the last one. We're creating for three things. I know it. So wait, social connection, productivity, and maturity, independence to grow. Because, you know, we're, if you look, you know, a tree starts with a seed and it matures. Mm. And, you
know, oh, that's good.
It's just we live in cycles from baby to maturity.
Yeah.
And for our kids, that means independence, focusing on helping them become as independent as they can. And if you question whether or not they actually want to be independent, I encourage you to look at people. My mother-in-law lived with us when she had Alzheimer's, and she was losing her independence, especially when my daughter was three, who was, and my mother-in-law was, you know, 70, and they were like about the same age mentally there for a while. Mm. But she tried to hang on to her independence as long as possible. So our kids do want that independence. So those are the three things, relationship, productivity, and independence.
Mm.
And I call independence also includes self-government. How to govern yourself through social skills, through your home skills, your self care skills, all that.
That's good, because we can put value and so many things in so many places, but I love that those three things, because you can fit everything in each one of those categories and say, how are we doing here? You know, and how am I doing as a parent in allowing my child to move in this direction too? Because we can sometimes undercompensate, overcompensate. And Karen said that she loves that insight.
Thank you, Karen.
So what are things that you did then to combat these homeschooling hurdles?
Let's see, I have to think back, because I did different things at different ages. But the one thing that I would encourage anyone to do whose child has problems communicate is make that your number one. thing, is teaching them how to communicate. And we, that can be through gestures, through pointing, you know, through sign language, and through using an AAC device. Any little bit of additional communication you can give them, the better. Now, one thing I ran into is, so the people in society tasked with teaching communication on an AAC device or speech therapist. And most, with very few exceptions, most of the ones I know teach AAC like they're teaching speech. They're not teaching communication. They're teaching speech.
They're just teaching words. Never even thought about that.
Yes, I had several conversations with her about that. And people, a lot of times, couldn't grasp that. No, that's, you know, that's speech. That's parts of speech. That's putting a sentence together.
Right.
If her ability to communicate is three words like a toddler, then let her just use the three words. Don't force her to use a complete
right. sentence. Because then it's not getting to the point of what you want to use it for. It's just, it's, right. yeah.
So there's teaching, so they, because with speech, they're teaching them how to say things. You know, it's just, it's slightly different. I don't fault them for it. That's what they're trained to do. They're
right.
trained to teach speech. But I wish there was a separate program, and maybe one day there will be, for teaching communication. So, so that was one thing that I've tried to focus on a lot is getting real communication going, because without that, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
That's the best word I use for forever. Other things I've done is, like I said, I filled out that little concussion sheet. Like,
okay, if right.
headaches, does she ever complain of having a headache? Tires easily. Does she, you know, if she's doing this, you know, if she's reading or she's using an app on an iPad and we're sitting side by side using it together, how long can she do that?
Yeah.
You know, after 15 minutes, we need to stop and she needs like a 15-minute break. So giving breaks. And I found also that by doing that, we actually reduced her seizures. So
really?
Because apparently a seizure is, I'm not a medical doctor. Don't take this as advice. Okay, caveat, disclaimer. So apparently it's just an electrical release in the brain. Well, I could see her seizures coming on 2 or 3 days in advance because she would start having like absent seizures, which she would stare, you know, stare and then, you know, come back to, you know, stare and come back. That would usually start happening 2 or 3 days before, and then she'd go on a full tonic pass out seizure.
Wow.
Shake and body thing and have to get the medicine. Call 911 a couple of times. So when I started paying more attention to reducing the cognitive load, it reduced the seizures. And that was huge. And, you know, recognizing coming on, the days leading up to it. So, and what that really meant sometimes was just half days of school. So, and that should be an encouragement. If you're homeschooling multiple kids, your ID child cannot be able to handle a full day of school.
Full day.
Because I have found that if I don't push her, she learns a lot more in those shorter time frames than if I try to get a longer school day. So, you know, just a few hours a day seems to be about right for her, and they're not always back to back. We've gotten to where we can go an hour to an hour and a half if I put the fun subject last in that
hour. Some motivation.
Yeah. And we rarely go the full hour and a half in a block of time, and then we'll take a break, but then it's lunch.
Right.
Yeah. And then we'll do more afterwards. And I also learn giving her the schedule. I know a lot of people are familiar with that, a written schedule. And if your child needs a visual schedule, you know, little pictures of what you're doing.
Right.
I just use words now. I used to use pictures in the beginning. Now we're where I can, you know, she can read the word. What else have we done? Those were big ones. Working on communication, working on you know, figuring out exactly how long she could go at one time. And so I didn't plan. That was the other thing I had to learn how to do, was how to plan my day, her school day, because with the boys, I could do, okay, at 9 o'clock, we're going to do math.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I just have to go, okay, from 9 to 10:30, we're going to do school. And we're going to try to get these three subjects done in that hour and a half, however long it takes. If it takes 30 minutes or if it takes an hour and a half, it's all good. And adjusting. And then once that's over, I just have a longer break to get other things done. I still sit with her. If it's school hours, I still sit with her. Well, and she can do something, you know, we do parallel play.
Okay. Yeah.
Just like little kids, just like little toddlers, we do parallel play. And I'll get on my computer and do my stuff, but I'm still with her during that school time. And that seems to help her regulate herself.
Okay.
And that's another thing I learned is co-regulation. When I think the term comes from people who have been through abusive situations and all this stuff. That's where I saw this.
Okay.
And if they're out in public and they start freaking out or whatever, and they have someone come alongside them who's calm, who can talk them back from the ledge. I've learned that if I behave in a certain way, it will trigger her more than if I can stay calm and exhibit in the moment the behavior that I want her to have emotionally. I think that's called co-regulation. And so it brings her down off the edge. The other thing I know about her, which I'd encourage you to learn about your own children, is she takes about 15 minutes to come down off the ledge when she cannot, like when she's had it and she's like way out of control. And I always said, oh, it's about 15 minutes, but this past week, this happened. And we told her she couldn't have the iPad back. So we were afraid she was going to break it. It's her communication device, so she has it at all times. She always has an iPad with her. But she was doing things that could break it. And so we took it away for 30 minutes. We set the timer on the stove. Setting a timer is another good thing.
Yeah.
Because even though she doesn't know what 30 minutes is, look at that timer and see if there's still time left on it, then it's not time yet. So I don't know how much of that time, but the fact that there are numbers moving on the clock means that it's not time yet. And she's kind of learning. She knows to count down from 3 for 30 minutes to 2 to 1. And so we set the timer for that. And it was almost exactly 15 minutes when she was able to self-modulate and not freak out about not having the iPad in her possession. And for the last 15 minutes, she just stood there and kept asking for it. But she was not yelling about it. It was great. It was amazing. And I stay calm. Oh, and that's the other thing I do. Even if we're having a bad school day, I still say, okay, well, it's school hours, so we're going to sit here. And I have to do a lot of waiting. When she's having a bad day, sometimes we don't have to do any of this stuff. But when it's a bad day, I just have to sit there and say, okay, well, if you're not ready, sometimes I'll move on to a different subject. And other times I'll say, you know, say, we'll come back to it. Or I'll just sit there and say, okay, if you're not ready, that's fine. We'll just sit here until you're ready. And then I don't do anything else. I just sit there.
Right. So you're not rewarding not doing anything. It's just, we're just waiting.
And that's one of the signs that there's more going on in those little heads than we would imagine. Because they are manipulating at times.
Right. So,
and that's another hard thing is, are they trying to get their own way? Or is it hard? That's an intellectual ability. When they get frustrated, your kids can rebel or refuse to do the work or whatever. And without that communication piece, it's like, even with the communication piece, is it because it's too hard? Because it's boring? Is it because, you know, could be, is, you know, the moon and stars aren't in a light, right? Like,
exactly.
It could be anything. if your child also has sensory problems, which I know a lot of them do, then that's another big thing is checking the environment. One thing I learned about my daughter, and it was interesting, I learned it from her sitting on the trampoline in the summer. Someone gave us a trampoline. So the first year we had it, she was out there. She got up from the trampoline and the backs of her legs were red from sitting on it. And so I realized that her clothes may have that spandex stuff in clothes.
Right.
I don't know how that relates to the trampoline, but in my mind it worked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the same rubbery type of.
Yeah. Anything with spandex in it. And of course, all blue jeans now. Almost every pair has that stretchy.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a while, I got rid of all that stuff and her behavior, her attitude improved. And it was always better because it was just, you know, cotton shorts, cotton shirts.
Right.
So environmental factors.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking at everything and it's exhausting.
Right.
That is just exhausting. So that's, but after over time, you know, you just look at one thing at a time and you learn. And then homeschooling gets, I don't know if it gets easier, but it does. Right.
But you gain more insight so that you have something to pull from and it isn't just a large frustration. I mean, yeah, you got a lot of time while you're sitting there waiting. Might as well pray. Say, yeah, okay, God, we need to solve this problem next. What am I not seeing? You know, and I noticed that with my son, too, when I didn't realize he was having back issues. A lot of it was coming out as behavior, and he has a debilitating back condition. And I'm like, just open my eyes, God. Let me see what is going on. And I noticed he was hunched over. Never before had I noticed that. Why? Because, you know, you're busy in your home and you don't realize these things until your eyes get opened. And then that understanding gives you so much compassion then, too. And I just hear you speaking that over and over again, you know, as you have understood your daughter, you know, just moving yourself into her world. And teaching her from that perspective versus, you know, what all these other people outside are telling you, this is what homeschooling needs to look like. And this is how you need to fix your child. And instead entering her world and teaching her from there. And it's just beautiful. I just thank you for just allowing us that insight into your life, Stephanie, because it's beautiful.
You'll feel like I'm not. Doing it very well.
Well, many times we don't, but you know, it's the end result and our kids are very patient and gracious to us. So can you share some encouragement for parents who are feeling frustrated right now and homeschooling their student with an intellectual disability? What do you want to be their top takeaway from what you shared?
Well, this will kind of go into my neurological thing that I was talking about earlier. Mm. This was a huge eye-opener for me. I've taken a lot of, because I'm older and I've had time, I've had years, you know, when my child was in school, I've been able to take advantage of different training in different areas, like nutrition, neurological organization, and then kind of what we've been talking about is the nurture aspect. I call it the three N's, nurture, nutrition, and neurological organization. And on the neurological organization part, that's really my heartbeat because that's what's made the biggest difference for my daughter. And if you've had your child tested, they probably were given an IQ score and it was probably pretty low. if your child is a moderate or severe disabilities.
Hmm.
So I think what is considered average? Is it like 70 or something like that?
I think 70 is, yeah.
So anything below 70, you know, you're thinking, but this one training that I had, kind of putting together with all the other stuff I had learned, what I learned was your IQ score is not an intelligence quotient. Mm-hmm. It's really a neurological organization quotient. It has nothing to do with the ability of your child to think, processed all that stuff. Well, I mean, the process kind of, but it's really a measure of their neurological organization. So if you think of a scale, and the top here is gifted, you know, profoundly gifted, you can have all that because you use the same language on the bottom end of it.
Uh-huh.
If you start with gifted up here and you have your neurotypical average, and then down here is what's considered intellectually disabled, anything below 70. And you can have mild ID, you can have moderate, severe, profound. And if you're below profound, then you're in a coma. So that's, and coma is your lowest state of neurological organization. Profound, you only have a little bit of neurological organization. So the higher you go up, that's, so gifted people aren't really smarter than everybody else. They just have better neurological organization.
And
you can process stuff better. So when I say assume intelligence,
Right.
Assume your child really can do and knows a lot more than you can possibly imagine, because that all that stuff, all those diagnoses, whether it's autism or cerebral palsy even, or MS or all those things, Down syndrome. Yes, that one, you know, has a distinct genetic component to it. But they are all related to neurological organization. The reason they have a diagnosis is because they are not neurotypical, which means you have average neurological organization. So what I want people to understand is it's there.
Right.
Don't ever forget that. It is there in your child. And if you are not, I'm especially speaking to those whose children are in the below average intellectual range. And I guess that would be intellectual disability. So I'm really talking to those people that your homeschooling, like how you were saying, may not look like you thought it would, or you think it should, or other people tell you it should, or because to reach your child, you will have to do things differently. And you will have to kind of make your own way through it at the, you know, based on your child. So we were talking about earlier, everybody's child is different. Even if you're a whole group of, you know, special needs 16-year-olds, then they're all different.
Exactly.
I know in the autism community, they say, if you've got one kid with autism, you've got one kid with autism.
That's right, exactly.
It's there. I'm still praying that God will show me a way to draw it out, then I can share it with everybody else. People have found ways. So my three N's are, after studying and researching all these years, those are the three ways that I have seen people reach their children with intellectual disability. Through nurture, which is what we're talking, you know, creating the environment where they can feel emotionally safe so that they can prosper.
Yeah.
Nutrition, because every single time I've done a nutritional intervention with any of my kids with all of their problems, they've gotten better. Sometimes a little, sometimes a lot. And so I know nutrition is a huge
piece of
the intellectual disability problem as far as neurological organization. It doesn't neurologically organize you. Oh, right. That's the next one. The third one is neurological.
But it refines it and it optimizes it, definitely.
It makes it easier to happen. And neurological organization deals with movement. You improve that through movement. And if nothing else, start walking. If you need Sue Patrick with Workbox, the work system, she talked about her son with autism, and she got a treadmill. And she, you know, and that was part of school, was walking on that treadmill every day. And I'm convinced that just because we're created to walk, to run, to, you know, to move it that way, that's our basic motor locomotion, is walking, that if you can just go walking with your child, that alone will improve neurological organization. I'm not a doctor, but I'm just recommending it based on what I've observed. And then if you can, there are also things like retained reflexes you can deal with and get. I've taken courses in that, and kind of like the brain gym activities or the book Smart Moves. All of those are what I'm talking about here with helping with neurological organization. So that's it. So the main takeaway after all that, the main takeaway is it's in there. And do what you can to bring it out. And it doesn't have to look. It only has to be, because some of our kids, I think you can improve neurological organization, which means their IQ would go up. I just don't know how much or how fast.
Right.
But.
And it's a number. It's a number. But yet you are. Yeah. What's most important is they're getting more organized and they can communicate and they can live in the world that they're in better.
That's it. Right. So you get them to the point where, you know, remediate the 3 R's as much as you can, and then give them enrichment so that they can function in the world that they're going to be in as an adult.
Yeah. Yeah. We got kind of a question about kind of that end of high school time and onto adulthood. We'll slip that in real quick before I have you share where people can find you. One of our YouTube viewers asked, thanks for sharing all that information. I can totally relate. Do all kids, no matter what, receive a school completion certification or diploma that might be handy for applying for jobs? So I don't know where she lives, so I'm sure you'll address that too.
Yeah, and schools hand out diplomas. And if you're in you can go on your state education website and it will tell you what kind of diplomas your state offers. Mm-hmm. And so you would choose the diploma that your child could complete. If your child is in high school and not able to get what's called a standard diploma, so you can look up your state name and the words standard diploma, and that'll at least take you to the right page, and you should be able to find the other ones. HSLDA.org
yes,
will also have information on mm-hmm. high school graduation. When it comes to special needs, if your child is going to have a regular job without supports, then my guess is they would, if they can complete the work, then it's not an issue. Mm-hmm. If they can't complete the work of a standard diploma, then you can get a special diploma or certificate of completion or whatever your state would call it.
Yeah. And it depends. It really depends on the state, because some states you can actually, because you are a private school, you set the standards for the diploma, and it can be considered almost a standard diploma that they give out. Because I know in some states they give a standard diploma to any child that graduates, whether in the special needs program or not. So it would depend. And I'm not so versed on Washington State. But you know what? If you join us next week, guess what? Next week on my program, I'm going to have one of the high school HSLDA consultants on, and she's going to talk about homeschooling her daughter with diabetes. So she would be the person to ask. So that might be a good in, but also check out, like Stephanie said, hslda.org, and they would have information about your state laws, as well as they have a struggling learner special needs department too, that would help with those laws. So, but thanks for that question. So we just got a few minutes left, Stephanie. I would love for you to share with our viewers just how they can connect with you, as well as I know you've got some incredible resources on your website that people can tap into right now, and a few things that say they're coming this year, and I'm super excited about them.
Okay, thank you. My website is artofspecialneedsparenting.com. See it right here on the screen. It disappeared.
Oh, it's now it's in a big one. Yes.
Okay. There it is right down there. Artofspecialneedsparenting.com. And there is, I started it and then COVID happened. And then I started creating all these resources and stuff behind the scenes. And so my website is kind of sparse right now, but there is something called the SOS Library. So that's mm-hmm. for help, for quick help. And there's some help for different things. And also, if you are thinking about pulling your child out of public school and homeschooling, there is a document on there, and it tells you what you need to know about how to do that. The other one's just some general help. And I'm currently working on a toolkit, a teacher prep toolkit for before you have, normally you have a scope and sequence. Like if you have a curriculum, mm-hmm. the sequence is your scope and sequence. So this is what you're going to teach this year, and this is how you're going to do it.
Right.
Special needs, you often have to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. It's all creating, and it's almost ready. It's almost ready. I thought it was going to be ready at the end of January. It should be ready by the end of this month. It's
awesome.
A toolkit that has where you set your scope, just setting your goals, and then a how to evaluate curriculum for your special needs child based on your goals. And then mm-hmm. the third part of the toolkit, or it's actually the third toolkit, is the planning part, which is mm-hmm. your sequencing. So it's supposed to help you do that whole scope and sequence thing based mm-hmm. for your child. And then
that's
I'm
awesome.
Also working on curriculum, like I mentioned earlier, specific to special needs children, especially those who are ID, can't communicate, mm-hmm. and with the idea that I said where you're remediating the three R's, but the rest of it is all enrichment. And then to show you how to do that, and I have a specific method. It's It's called the ELART method, and it's explore, label, apply, reason, produce. And so the label, apply, reason, if you've familiar with classical education, you might see that in there.
Okay.
So it kind of incorporates classical education with some other stuff. And the produce is the long-term vision for your homeschool. Seeing, you know, what if your child isn't going to the workplace during the college, what are they going to do after they turn 21? Yep.
Setting that vision.
Mm-hmm. So it's setting the vision right from the start, whether you start kindergarten or 12th grade.
That's awesome. Yes. And so Art of Special Needs or parenting.com if you're listening on the podcast and you wanted to know where to go. So that's where you can find Stephanie. And we'll have that YouTube, the link in the YouTube description if you are catching this on a YouTube video as well. So, and our YouTube viewer came back. She goes, perfect. Thank you. And thanks, Stephanie, for the pointer. So,
you're welcome.
Awesome. So this has been, we're already over our hour. Wow. we can definitely talk a lot. But thanks again, Stephanie, for just all that you shared and the wisdom. That it's been inspiring, to just hear your story and, what you're doing with your daughter. And it's, I'm sure, encouraging to many. And so thank you so much.
Thank you, Penny. I love being here.
Yeah, and I'm super excited about all the work that you're working on. And Stephanie also works behind the scenes at SPED Homeschool. We do some consulting for two different states, and Stephanie helps with that as well. So we're excited to have her helping out with some SPED Homeschool stuff as well. But yeah, that just keeps increasing. And I want to thank our audience, too. Thank you all for joining us on Empowering Homeschool Conversations. You know, this is just one of the many resources we have at SPED Homeschool. And you can check out our blogs. Like I said, this turns into a podcast as well. And we just have a lot of things going on. And coming this summer, super exciting. Registration starts a month from today. We are having our first family camp, which is going to be awesome. It's going to be in Stuartville, Minnesota. So just by Rochester, the Mayo Clinic area in Minnesota. And we'll have room for 20 families. And so if you are interested in that, you can check out our social media. Has some information right now. We'll have information up on our website soon. But we're excited to start that in partnership with the Johnny and Friends Ministry and expand out, is our hope, into other states after this year. So anyways, that's super exciting. Glad to be able to announce that. It's something that's been on my heart for a long time, and I can't wait. So anyways, next week we are going to continue this topic. And like I said, we have one of the HSLDA consultants on, and we're going to talk about homeschooling your student with diabetes and just kind of some of the things that come along with that. And so our guest is going to share her story, her daughter's story, and just encourage you in that. So I hope that you can join me and my guest then. But it's same time, same place. And so, we'll be back here next week. But again, thank you, Stephanie. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. Check out Stephanie's resources at specialneedsparenting.com. And we'll see you all again next week. Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Hey everybody, I'm Dale.
And I'm Tamara.
We're hosts of the Kynos Project podcast,
where we help you tackle ancient Christian truths in everyday settings.
To learn more and subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.